Thank you for listening to the Iffy Market Podcast. I'm your host, Sky Cassidy, and the baddest ass PR person in the land, Carla Jo Helms, and co-host of the Iffy Market Podcast is here with us.
That's me, and I'm lovely too. Hello.
And today we'll be talking about content marketing and using content marketing to fuel demand generation with Kelly Noblett. Kelly's responsible for the strategy and execution of content marketing for Skillsoft in the North American region. Before taking on content marketing, Kelly spent 10 years managing demand generation programs, and that gave her an understanding of the complex content needs for potential buyers. Kelly, we are super thrilled to have you on today.
Thanks for having me, Sky. Thrilled to be here.
So before we jump headlong into content marketing and demand generation, let's talk a little bit about yourself. What can you tell us? What do you want people to know about you?
Well, let's see. I grew up in the Massachusetts suburbs, and I went to college at University of Connecticut, and kind of became interested in marketing because I always liked to write. I wasn't a super creative writer. Like, I wasn't sitting around writing stories all day, but I learned from a young age that I was good at communicating and wanted to try to polish that skill and transfer it to professional life. So that's kind of what kind of got me in the door with marketing, was trying to see how I could use writing and turn that into earning a living that, you know, wasn't being a newspaper publisher or, a novelist, if you will.
Nice. And then B2B versus B2C, was there any active decision on what way to go there? Did you just kind of end up on one side?
Sort of accidental. You know, in graduate school, we definitely learned about both approaches. And it just so happens that my first job out of college was a B2B environment. And that's kind of the direction I've been going in since then.
I guess it isn't like when you're in high school and thinking, maybe I want to go into marketing. You think, B2B or B2C? I guess it doesn't quite get thrown around. People don't make those distinctions until later in your career.
Yeah, definitely.
So Skillsoft, can you tell us a little bit about what Skillsoft does and kind of what your role there is?
Skillsoft is a leading e-learning company. They make courseware that helps people learn new skills, like compliance or new IT skills or how to, you know, achieve leadership skills. And what my day-to-day there is, I manage the content marketing function. So I make sure that we have a variety of thought leadership-like content, such as white papers, articles, listicles, infographics that our demand gen team can use to attract new business and also to help support our customers and sales teams when they are out there talking to prospective buyers.
Can you give just an average day for you?
It's madness, actually.
Writing.
Well, you wouldn't believe, the process it is to get something published and, you know, kind of the what it takes to get there. So every day is different, which I like, because I think if every day were the same, I would be bored. It ranges from making edits to something to sitting in a meeting with somebody trying to come up with a strategy for a particular product line. It's looking at something that we have and trying to figure out a different way to tell that story. It's certainly a lot of different things, and it's a lot of collaboration with different members of the company, which I like because I like talking to people and I like meeting new people and hearing different perspectives and whatnot. So that's one thing about the job that's really interesting and exciting. You know, from a higher level, content marketing is, on my end, is making sure that we have a healthy editorial, that we have a strategy for the year, that we're not just creating things, you know, on a whim. You know, it's like we are looking at our what we want to say for the year and trying to create content that aligns with that. And it's my job to kind of get that conversation started. And it requires a lot of buy-in with a lot of different people within the organization, you know, the executive team. Certainly our leaders that are at the top are very much interested in what we're going out there with. So they want to weigh in on that. And then all our subject matter experts that manage product functions have a point of view because they're an expert on their field. So we want to consult them. and find out what it is that is the hot button issue that we should be talking about.
So you're not given a, hey, create this content thing, really. You're coming up like an outside ad agency or something almost with the overall plan and the concepts and then having to go and sell it to your executives.
Yes. And so some of the nitty gritty, like, oh, we're going to have 2.5 infographics on this topic. Don't go to the executive. It's at that level. We're talking about the theme for the year.
So there's strategy. And then you work with the other teams to build out the tactical.
Yeah. But I'm the catalyst for the strategy. And, you know, people come to me with ideas, but it was my job to kind of get the process started for how are we going to go to market. You know, I go to meetings and things and I hear ideas and then I present them and say, hey, I think we should try to do it this way. And then I get, you know, the feedback from the executive leaders and then we, you know, course correct accordingly. And, you know, we do this throughout the year too, because at the beginning of the year, you might think one way and then towards the end of the year, things might change. So we're agile and can pivot when necessary.
Constantly adjusting, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Sometimes you have to adjust with the news too, I suppose. If there's something that's relevant to your business, you don't want to ignore it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that tends to be more on the PR side for sure. And I definitely support that function with content. But certainly, like, if there's a big news item, that kind of tends to be more on that end, because on my end, I'm doing, you know, longer form content most of the time. And certainly if we had a plan for the year and we said, oh, in Q4, we're going to create XYZ, and then the news goes one direction, that might influence how we spin a particular topic for sure. So, you know, it's like we always have to kind of have our eyes open and ears open for what's changing in the world.
Right, right.
Well, since we're diving into it already, I'd like to dive into, like, you know, content generation, demand generation, and kind of for our audiences. And then how do you go about it? Because I think you're already talking about that already.
Oh, yeah. Can you give us an overview of what that is and what the kind of the connection, I guess, to kick things off?
Well, content fuels demand generation. You can't go out there and try to get people to buy your product if you don't have something of value to offer them. You know, nowadays, people are making their decisions about where they want to buy and what they're interested in before they've spoken to someone. So if you don't have great thought leadership out there where people can find it, then you're missing out because your competitor does. And, they're out there reading from a competitor's website instead of getting what they need through your channels. So that's one thing. What I try to do is I'm aware of what our demand generation team is doing. I'm aware of their budget and, you know, what sort of placements they're going for. And so when I'm thinking about the content strategy, I'm thinking about content that will perform well in the channels that team is using, you know, what the advertising channels that they're using and, you know, the internal campaigns that they might be doing within the database that we have. So basically, you know, they can't go and do an email blast if they don't have something to draw people to. So that's right, where right. I come in. I support that so that team has a healthy campaign pipeline in place with interesting content to offer.
But it sounds like what you're starting from is a strategy to create demand. It's not just a content strategy. It's very like it is to create demand. So it's more tied to sales. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm supposed to be hand in glove with the demand generation team. So they mm-hmm. do have their own strategy. They have their own plan. And then I, knowing what that is, that helps me come up with mine. You know, what I start at the top. I think about what our corporate themes are going to be for the year. And once those are blessed and decided, then, you know, it's a very much a collaboration with that team about the different angles that we think might perform well on their end. And then we use that to start creating tactical pieces where we actually say, okay, well, we know we're going to talk about leadership and we're going to talk about high potential leadership. And this is a particular paper that we're going to create. And this is kind of the date time frame that we're going to have it done so that when they plan, they know, you know, what to expect, that sort of thing.
Can you give an example there within Skillsoft of that process? I mean, we're kind of working on hypotheticals right now, but to really cement it for people, maybe something particularly.
Yeah, Yeah, give us a real life scenario.
Well, so I'm sure that other businesses kind of follow this same kind of idea, but you know, say the demand generation team is told they have a budget of, I'm just going to make it up, say they have $100,000 to spend, and they know they're going to be spending most of it on advertising placements. And, you know, some of the advertising placements are targeting executives and some of them are targeting managers, that sort of thing. Me with that knowledge, it might spark me to say, okay, you know, we have this particular white paper that is a topic that would interest both people, but what you might want to do is, take that white paper instead of having, you know, two different white papers, which are pretty lengthy and time consuming to create, is taking one that could potentially have broad appeal and then positioning it in a way that would appeal to their audience. So, you know, you might present it in a slant that speaks to the executive in an email so that they would open it. You know, it's like empower your team or give your team the tools they need to, you know, have a productive time or whatnot. Versus when you're talking to the manager, it might be make your life easier by making sure that you have the skills needed to do your job. You know, so it depends on who the audience is.
So you'll make several versions of the same creative, kind of the same.
Well, it depends. So like, it might be that they simply just position it differently when they are doing their writing. So, you know, in their ad, they might position it with that person in mind and still offer the same piece of content.
So you're saying make it for the different publics or target, there's different voices. So this is all part of the strategy of different pieces of who's it going to. And having the same content, but then you have to rewrite it for the different voices.
Yeah, and well, what I'm saying is like the advertisements or the emails might be written for the different voice, and that the paper might be brought right. up that it appeals to them. If it's extreme, it might warrant a slight edit and offering the same paper, but with a slightly different spin for that particular audience, or offering a derivative piece from that piece of content that might be more appealing, maybe a longer form for somebody that's of executive level, and something more short and to the point, like 10 ways you can optimize your blah, blah, blah to the person that's actually doing the work directly. So it just depends on the situation. But that's why the partnership between content and demand generation is important, because if content is out there creating in a vacuum and isn't understanding how the demand generation team is trying to work and who they're going after, it doesn't work. You know, you have to kind of be on the same page about what's needed.
So that you don't want to miss that handoff between that department, basically. So right. Your content really needs to be focused on helping generate leads. And we're talking about demand generation, but it seems like there's a handful of different things content can do. I've got, you know, branding, thought leadership. It can be informational, which is probably farther down the pipeline, maybe.
Yeah, certainly. Like, content has to support all stages of the buying cycle. So, you know, in my case, because part of my particular role is to work closely with demand gen, there might be cases where a company has a really large content department and they have some people paired with demand gen and some people paired with public relations. It just depends, I guess, on how the organization may be structured.
And who's the person that coordinates all of those messages? Because that's like can be very separate silos unless you have somebody doing that.
Well,
is that you?
So on my end, helping establish that common theme and strategy, it gets published in a place where the whole entire marketing team can collaborate. So they have access to that. And then people on the various teams, the leaders of those teams, have access to that framework. And then they adapt the framework according to their discipline. So the person that's the overseas PR at our company knows what the theme is, knows what the hooks are, and uses that when making decisions on behalf of that function. So, you know, we empower people to do their job. We don't tell people this is how you have to say it. You know, we have some positioning guidelines.
You let them be creative based off of those positioning guidelines.
Yeah. And, you know, internally too, we have people that if, you know, a particular owner of a product would have a positioning guide that they would produce. I would not produce that. And they would, you know, give people that guideline so that they could go ahead and, you know, do what they need to do in their job. So, but everybody's different, you know, that in our case, we try to put the tools out there so that people can work accordingly.
So it seems like the first stage, we've talked a bit about it, is working with the demand gen team to make sure you're creating the right content. You're creating what's going to help them generate leads, basically.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different types of content. I mean, you mentioned like a listicle, like the top 10 type of thing. There's more content that would be informational. There's all different types of things that you can create, videos and all kinds of stuff. So if you kind of figure out what you want to create with that and, you know, are you going to make infographics, all that kind of stuff, then you need to actually create it. Can we talk about the creation process itself a little bit? You know, what kind of tools you guys use there, how you create these, the content pieces?
Yeah, the creation process can be madness and highly variable because we're relying on humans and trying to get people to, you know, respond in a timely manner. But, you know, things happen. People travel, people get sick, people go on vacation. So trying to keep a disciplined timeline for editorial review is always a challenge. And I'm sure that that's a challenge for many companies. Internally, one of our tools that we like to use is Smartsheet. That's how we stay organized. And so Smartsheet is our way of understanding what's in production and the status. It's a way for people to make a request because I come up with ideas for the year, but other people have lots of great ideas because they're very much in the weeds with their own area of expertise. So they might know something I certainly am not attuned to, and they'll come to me and say, we need to be talking about this because this is very important and it falls under this corporate theme. And so that might be requested through that tool, and then progress and whatnot can be tracked using that tool. We have an intranet where we keep our inventory of content. So selective things are on the website. The website is not a repository. You know, we have a web team that manages that and decides, you know, how things offers might be structured on the website. But internally, you know, we have an intranet destination with SharePoint where we can access pieces of content that may not be accessible via the website.
Right. Finished, in progress, all kinds of stages, that kind of stuff.
Well, definitely finished. Things that are in progress would be shared with those that are part of the editing process. So, you know, if there's a subject matter expert that is the author of the piece, then the editing would be back and forth with that person, you know, wouldn't be available to the organization until it was approved and designed and ready to go. So, you know, that's just one tool that we use, SharePoint and Smartsheet. We don't have, I'm sure bigger organizations might have a content creation tool. You know, we don't have that at our company, but I'm sure that bigger organizations might use something like that to disperse content and manage the creation portion.
Right. So you come up with the concept, you've worked with the demand generation team on that, you get all the best ideas from all your people. Then the actual creation, you have the copywriting, the graphic design, you know, depending on what type of creative it is, you need all that expertise. Do you typically do that in-house? Do you outsource some of it? Can you speak to that?
Yeah. So, you know, we are hoping to grow, but, you know, for the time being, the way we operate is me managing the content and doing some of the writing, and then also relying on external freelancers or contract employees to do the writing. So if something's decided and we have an outline and we have buy-in from the expert, then we have some people that we can give the work to help flesh it out and, you know, support the work with research and whatnot. And then it will go back to myself. And I am always looking at the piece of content before it then goes back to the team of people for review. And so then once everything is approved and ready to go, then we move that. I'm the one that would move it along.
So are you the one that looks at it and shreds it up and throws it in the air and screams at everybody to do better?
No, not like that. No, and certainly when working with outside people, they may not realize something that I know because I was in a meeting or because I just know how we present something. So I'll catch things so that when it goes back to the expert internally, that they see it in the best possible shape. So, you know, that's kind of our process. And then what I typically do is I try to get everything blessed and approved before it goes to graphic, because that's a best practice. A graphic designer never wants to make
multiple changes based off of copy.
Copy, yeah. Changes and layout. It happens, but right. Like for extensive changes, it's just not an efficient use of time. So, you know, it goes to the graphic designer when it is approved and ready to go. And then that person does their beautiful graphical magic, and I give it one last once over, and then that person takes care of publishing it so that internal individuals can use it. And then it can, you know, if it is applicable, it will go on the website and the demand gen team can make use of it. So
you repurpose it in as many different places and, you know, I guess sizes and shapes as possible, and then make available to the team basically.
Yeah, you know, it's efficient if you're spending so much time creating a research document, you know, white paper or a research report or something of value. Maybe you did a study and you're publishing an interesting finding, and it took, you know, months to do the study and then a couple months to publish the white paper. You don't want to just use it one time and let it go. You want to think about that paper and how you can use it. And I think it influences us. You know, I don't want to spend months of my time creating something that isn't going to get a lot of mileage. So when I'm looking at something, I'm thinking about the potential for derivative work. Could we, you know, make this into a shorter form thing? Could we take this and turn it into an article? Or could we take this and ask the person that was the author to simplify and be a blogger on the company blog? You know, it's all those things are taken into consideration. And I'm sure that's a practice that a lot of companies try to follow, because creating content is not free. Even though we might be able to produce things without freelance support and budget, that doesn't mean it's free, because there's time and talent. You know, when you're using me to do something, that's still costing money.
Yeah. How much content do you actually put out per year, per month? Do you have a amount of words or deliverables, or how many white papers or then email messages to back it up? Or how much do you actually generate?
That's something that we're working towards. You know, I've been trying to come up with the science for how much we can produce, you know, given the number of resources we have available to us. There isn't really a magic number. I would think that it really is.
What is it for your company? Do you know now? Or
I think we're still trying to figure out our best practices. Content marketing as its own function is kind of new at our company. Before, it was sort of adopted by many different individuals, members of the demand gen team, members of product, and it wasn't under a particular owner like it is now. So we're still trying to figure that out. I think you, in order to make a determination about what's appropriate for content, you have to think about what are we doing? What are we doing for the year? How are we going to use it? How many different programs are we doing? What's the budget? What sort of people do you have to create it? Because it wouldn't make sense if you had the money just to create content for the sake of creating content. If you made 50 white papers for the year, there are 52 weeks in a year. So really, it's like, you need one?
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of content. When you do a white paper, how much do you actually use it? Like, typically, do you have an email marketing campaign that goes with it? Do you have a blog campaign, a social media campaign, like all of those? Do you come up with its own campaign for a white paper to make sure that you can utilize the most out of it?
Actually, yeah. So from a performance standpoint, we track by the assets so we can see what performs. And so it's fortunately, it's not my responsibility to come up with all the programs. It's my responsibility to kind of know what people need and then create the content for them. But each owner, you know, will make use of a white paper in their own way. You know, certainly our demand gen team would take a white paper and use it multiple times over the course of several months in their advertising campaigns and also campaigns that might target the database. And if it's a really good piece of content, the salespeople would speak to it. And, you know, as they're having conversations with prospective buyers, they might be sharing that piece of content with them.
Right. Well, I know good content and good content collateral can be utilized for years.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes with just even tweaks, you know, because it does speak to the issues that, you know, industries and, you know, publics are experiencing. You know, what caused the affluence can continue to cause it.
Oh, absolutely. For sure.
Kelly, I've got a question for you to think on here. I want to jump to break, but before we do that, I want to pose a question for you. You think it over during the break. What's the basics that people need to come to the table with? So for example, if you're going to write 2 blog posts in a year, don't bother. It's a waste of time. If you're going to create a white paper that's the general information doc on your company, well, that one thing is useful. And like Carla Jo was just saying, you can use it for a long time as well. So if you could think of kind of the starting from scratch, what are the first things they should focus on to get the bare minimum kind of in place and maintained? We'll talk about that after the break.
Sounds good.
Hey, this is Patrick McFadden, founder at Indispensable Marketing. If you're a professional service provider or a B2B business owner and you're struggling to attract your best clients and also charge a premium for your service, I think you should really check out our website at indispensablemarketing.com. You'll find some great resources there. And if you want to reach out, just click our free consultation button.
Hi, we're back from the break. This is Sky Cassidy with the If You Market podcast. I've got Carla Jo Helms.
Hi, guys.
And Kelly Noblett here with me. We're talking about content marketing to fuel demand generation. Kelly, right before the break, I threw you a question about kind of the bare bones must have content for people or what they should start out with to get the most bang for their buck. Can you speak to that?
Sure, Sky. So I think the bare bones content concept is to think about the stages of the buying cycle, you know, as the top of the funnel, middle of the funnel, and bottom of the funnel. So if you have a lot of top of the funnel content, you know, things that are more broad and thought leadership in nature that attract people, and then you have nothing else to give them to kind of take them along the path, then that's a problem. So thinking about things that support them midway in their buying journey. So maybe good examples of things that are mid-funnel are video assets or calculator tools or comparisons or...
You said listicles, which is a very interesting term. Not everybody would know that, but like a listicle would be part of that, right? Like a content piece that's just a list of things?
It could be, yeah. So it, generally, the way I think of a listicle, it's a 1 or 2 pager, usually has a snazzy title, something like, you know, 5 ways you can like improve your business by doing XYZ. Like it's almost, I think of a
right.
BuzzFeed article or something like that.
3 things not to do to write your content
right.
marketing.
The 5. Yeah.
5 yeah, things that'll kill you before dinner.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. It's something where you have to be somewhat knowledgeable about a particular topic.
Kelly, between if you're going to have a list, I mean, where would you land in between saying 1 way to or saying 100 ways to? Like, do you find when creating a list, is there a magic number? Do you just want to do however many things there is in that category?
I think you want to keep it manageable. I would say like, you know, 10 or 12 is sort of the maximum, but having 3 to 5, maybe 5, the top 5 things you could do. It's good because I think people have a short attention span and what they want is actionable advice that can help them solve a problem immediately. So if you eliminate it to, you know, the top 5 things you need to do, then that might be appealing to someone that's trying to, you know, solve something specific.
I remember I saw one a while back and maybe it worked just because of the bizarre nature of it, but it was something like 78 ways to, and I was like,
oh my
what?
God.
How many things can you
Who's
possibly
read
come
that,
up with?
By yeah. the way, like I've seen it go all the way up to 13.
Yeah, no.
Once you get into the high, the, you know, maybe like above 100, though, I want to open it just to see how did you possibly come up with that many ideas?
Yeah.
That would be you.
You can't read
I do
them
have
all.
A question, though. I have a question. For our readers, so we've been talking about a high level stuff and stuff that you're doing. And, you know, I'm thinking like they are our listeners, right? So what would be the, like, if someone was going to develop a content strategy around something for demand gen, right? You said the different funnels of the buying cycle, right? What would be a good, like, people always want, well, how many pieces do I need for this cycle? And how many do I need for that cycle? And I know it's different for every company, but what is something that they could do? Like, for the first section of the buying cycle, would they need a white paper? Do they then need an email campaign to follow up with that? Blogs to go with it? Possibly a newsletter? You know, what are the basic pieces that are like the staples that people need to think about with demand gen?
Well, I would say if you were a new business and you'd never done anything before and you had a very limited budget and limited team, I think you would start with maybe one idea for the quarter. And maybe you have one high value piece of thought leadership that is, you know, a topic that you think will resonate with your audience. And my interpretation of something that's high top of the funnel is that it's usually broad. It could be a research report. Maybe you've done your own research, or maybe you've licensed a research report, or you've done a white paper that has a lot of third-party research to back up claims. And then you'd want to have assets that are somewhere in the middle. Maybe you take that and you make a listicle, or you do some sort of assessment where a person or a company could look at where they are and with respect to a particular business problem they're solving and try to see where they are, you know, compared to their peers, sort of thing. And then you want to have things that support the later stages of the buying cycle. If you have somebody that has done a lot of research and has already made up their mind, they're between you and two other brands or something like that.
Yeah.
You can't not help them close the deal there. That's where you want to have your references, your case studies, factual product information, which I don't manage, but you want to have brochures or at least some sort of fact sheet or place where someone can go to understand what it is that they would be buying if they were to go, partner with your business. So those are the bare bones things. So having, one piece of content that you repurpose in many ways in a quarter is certainly the bare bones.
Well, I like that. So let me just see if I'm getting back with you here. So the first phase is like you're giving them enough content to help them make the decision. So you have a white paper. You could follow it up with a listicle. You could follow up with an assessment, this against that, helping them make the decision. But then when you get into the second phase, let's just say, and this is all hypothetical phases, but this is someone who, okay, they're between you and two others, right? So they move into that particular funnel. Well, this would be content based off of helping them make the decision between the others, the fact sheet, the brochures of exactly what they would be buying, the references, case studies, right?
Yep. And so, that stage tends to be closely handled with sales, when people are that interested, sales are having conversations, they're on site, they're sharing that feedback. Certainly, telling you the magical way to go to market, that's a little tough because that is very variable depending on what your business is and what you're trying to achieve, what your goals are, your budget, the amount of people you have to do it, all that. So, saying that you need to have 75 email campaigns in your per quarter, it's something I can't tell you because it would really depend on what your goals are and who you are and what you're doing. But you want to, if you know that you have budget to do 50 advertisement placements and you have only one piece of content, you might want to consider having other pieces of content to support that. Certainly it makes a lot of sense to take something and rerun it multiple times because it takes a lot of touches before someone really gets attracted. Somebody is being marketed to via a database, it might take 7 touches for them to raise their hand and say, actually, I would like to learn more, or I will answer my phone when being contacted about this particular product.
Right.
Kelly, that's an interesting subject. I want to ask you, where do you come down on the reuse of content or republishing of content? I guess I'd say I see it on social media. Let's use it as an example. It can be in email marketing. You could do the same thing, but you've got a piece of content and you post it on Twitter. And I've noticed that a lot of companies, and it seems to make sense to me, will post the same content multiple times per day over time, because it's almost like it's a commercial. There's a feed of information coming at you. It's not like your inbox where you look at each email. You're not going to scroll through your whole history of Twitter. So if you just put it out once in the day, I guess the concept is then only people who are looking at Twitter at that time are going to see it. So when you have content like that, would you recommend posting it regularly for a while, multiple times a day throughout the week, over time? What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. And you know, I am the one that creates the content, but it's really the other people that manage those channels that kind of ultimately make the decision on what that magical number is that they want to put something out mm-hmm. there for. But, you know, I mean, good common business sense is that putting something out there and assuming that everybody has seen what you've put there the first time and that they're super interested is kind of unrealistic. So if you really do want people to, you know, to see your message and to interact with you, giving it multiple opportunities to be read is definitely the way to go, especially given the amount of time it takes to create something. So certainly, I don't know what the recommended tweets number of tweets were for companies. Say it was 6 or 8. You know, I don't know what it is today. That's for the social media team on it to make the determination. But you know, you'd want to repeat something that's of high value.
Right. You're wasting your content creation if you make a Super Bowl commercial and only show it during the Super Bowl once, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, think of it like that, and assume that people haven't seen it, and you want to make sure you get that message out there. You know, maybe a slightly different slant.
Well, repurposing is huge.
Maybe treat whatever budget you have like it's your Super Bowl commercial budget, because that is for you. I mean, that's whatever you put out is your Super Bowl commercial, whatever your most expensive.
Yeah, I wish I had the Super Bowl commercial budget to do the work that I'm doing. We do not have that.
Well, I guess my point is whatever budget you have, that's your Super Bowl commercial budget. Whatever your biggest piece is you make, that's your Super Bowl commercial. It's not being shown during the Super Bowl, but wherever it's being put, that's kind of how you have to purpose it.
Well, and that's why being on the same page with the whole company is really key. You know, everyone being in agreement about how we're talking about the company, how what the key messages are for the company, so that when something's created, you know, one team takes it and puts it out there, and we're all, you know, it's one brand, one band. You know, we're all kind of saying the same thing. And ooh, look,
that's a good bumper sticker.
Coordinated. I wish I could take credit for coming up with that, but that's
you can. But, we'll put you. I'll quote you on it.
Well, I still have a burning question that I didn't get to. So you mentioned something about parts of the buying cycle. So you said one is like, could be help make a decision. The second one is you've got somebody that's actually making a decision between a couple of others. Is there a last bucket or a hypothetical last bucket? Like now they've made a decision. Now what?
I guess mid funnel they're still conflicted and still trying to determine who to go with. You know, it's like maybe they've narrowed it down to, we think we know what sort of solution we need, but we don't know exactly who we're going to work with. And then stage three is, okay, let's close the deal here. Who are we going to decide on? And so that's where it gets to be more personal. Maybe they're talking to customers, they're making phone calls and, you know, doing reference calls to find out what the experience is for another customer that's, you know, buying something similar to what they're looking for.
Is there an after the creative or after the sale creative where, you know, here's your customers, keep them happy creative kind of a thing?
Sure there is. Yep. And fortunately that doesn't really fall under me. Because that's a whole other discipline that could keep someone busy full time. But certainly, you want to keep customers happy. So
I would say on a budget, if you can't afford to have a person that just focuses on that, it's actually a lot easier than it sounds. It's just called a Starbucks gift card. That's how you keep them happy. You send them that and you're done. Creative done.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Salespeople, that's all they have to do. They don't have to but I would say it becomes a sales responsibility. At bigger organizations, sales would have multiple resources at their disposal to help retain happy customers.
Right. Keep your company front of mind aside from just being bludgeoned by a salesperson. Something just kind of a regular give so their brand is out there, I guess.
Yeah. And really, I mean, depending on what your company does, the way that you go about that would vary depending on what you should do.
I guess if you're a gym, that's not very B2B, but if you have a membership service, you kind of don't want to remind them. You just want to go away and hope they never notice they're being billed a month. But
that's one area where
the content, the ongoing content, you just want to disappear and keep getting that monthly fee.
Yeah, they're hooked for the year. So
yeah, I'd like to focus real quick onto the demand generation part of it. So we talked a lot about the content, the delivery of the content. You got this. You want to create content. You got the sales team that wants leads. What are the actual mechanisms for taking a piece of content and generating a lead from that somebody can do? So they write up a white paper, an infographic, something like that. How do they get lead information to pass to their sales team?
Well, I mean, I would think most people would have a form set up somewhere, and how you track forms and manage your campaigns is I'm sure unique to each company and how they want to go about keeping track. But I mean,
so gated content, kind of
gated content. Yeah. And that's really my focus, is making sure that we have really strong gated content, because we have a particular demand gen budget and we want to make sure that the demand gen team has good pieces of content to use to support their needs for the content gate. So using a form and, potentially marketing automation to get names in the database, and then getting those names and notifications to a sales team to do the follow-up calls, because certainly people need to be followed up on in order to get them to, take a meeting or do a next step with your company.
Right. So that's the number one thing for you, is gated content, forms, drive them through to actually get the content after giving them a sample or something like that.
Yeah. And I do have to think about the other types of content that could come out of something higher value. So somebody on the social team might do an infographic, and that would be ungated. And so while it can be tough for people on looking at the numbers, it's like, oh, we're not getting leads for that. But that's part of the mix, is, giving people things for free so that they may choose to raise their hand and actually take a call or to.
You've got to butter them up, basically, with your brand. So you'd start with some sort of brand recognition give, and then look to get in the front door. So you don't want to send the first thing you send them to be some sort of gated content.
Well, it could be, because we consider a lot of our gated content to be top of the funnel. But, it depends on where people are looking.
I guess
someone's,
if it's
on
compelling
your
enough.
Right, exactly. And, if someone is browsing your website and they're mid-funnel, you don't know what stage they are when they're looking at your website. And they try to, learn something about you, and they can't get simple information without having to give their form, they might abandon it. So there's always some amount of content on the website that someone can read and get an understanding, and then potentially fill out the form for the big thing. When we're going after people in our external campaigns where they get an email and it's, a compelling topic to them, then, we do get leads from people filling out the form that, haven't been given something for free.
Right. I mean, you might, if it's a product where you're just saying, here's what we have, at some point, let us know if you'd like more information. It can be as simple as that almost.
Well, I guess it depends on what your goal is and who you are and what you're doing.
You'd give them content first, but then the call to action maybe to get the lead might just be, hope you had a great read. Here's what we do. Let us know if
really, you know, depends, you'd like on this the company.
To set up a demo. It depends.
Yeah, exactly. That might be what we would.
It's a little clunky. I know I'm designing a clunky system here. I'm not a content expert, so.
Yeah. So I will say every piece of content we do has a call to action. So we would never finish a white paper and not give people a next step.
I love that. Ours does too. I'm glad that you do that.
That's good.
I think it's important because you have to control them. You know, I really like this because it's really tying to the business plan, because sales has everything to do with the business plan, and demand for the products and services has everything to do with the business plan. So the content should too. And I really love the fact that you can group these into buckets or funnels or parts of the funnel, right? And where the prospect is in the buying process, and gear content to them for that. And I think companies could come up with a very simple outline for that and execute it. And then the next year, make it a little more robust. And, you know, they don't always have to. I mean, if it works, it works. But I think this was very helpful.
Good.
Yeah. I guess I'd say, do you have any kind of quick, if you were to make a listicle of the do's and don'ts or something like that, quick things you can throw out to people, pitfalls that you see, or kind of little tricks that are really useful to make sure you are doing. I know you just mentioned, you know, make sure every piece of content has a call to action. And I'd like to add on to that. Don't confuse call to action with always be selling or always be closing. It's not put a credit card authorization form as the last page in every piece of content. It might be come to the site. It's any action. Sometimes people hear call to action, they're like, yeah. And then you tell them where to buy and send them to your sign up form. It's like, no, it can just be come to the site or come see more of this content on this area, that kind of thing. But do you have any do's and don'ts for people?
Sure. I mean, I guess number one is don't create content for the sake of creating content. Like, oh, we have to have 1,000 widgets and we're going to do 1,000 widgets because having more is better. More is not better. You need to be thoughtful about your strategy, thinking about what you need to be doing for the year, what you're trying to say, and how you're going to use it. Without keeping that in mind is not going to be a worthy use of time, because if you spend months and months and months creating something and then you haven't actually planned for how that might be repurposed, then, you know, you've wasted time and talent doing something that isn't going to get a lot of traction. Certainly having a call to action on your content, having variety of content, because some people respond better to research while others respond better to a visual, like an infographic or a video of sorts.
Right.
Well, and it's really important to continue to ding in the message. It doesn't matter if you're doing that in PR, marketing, advertising. I mean, look at Coca-Cola. I mean, they've been dinging in the message that Coke makes you happy for 100 years, right? So, you know, people equate Coke to happiness. So it's the same thing. You have content. Someone might do better in a very conservative tone. Someone might do better in a very authoritative tone. Someone might do better with more facts and figures. Have you ever read a book that the author said something, but then he kept describing it in so many different ways and so many different viewpoints that by the time you got done with it, you couldn't help but agree with
it? And certainly, keeping in mind that people learn in different ways and people's role influences how they think. So trying to think about your personas and how you would angle something to appeal to a particular buying persona. Because not everyone's the same. Not everyone is going to think the same. So being mindful of who that audience is when you're creating stuff is really key. I'd also say that, you know, trying to get your company to be in collaboration and have kind of an integrated approach when it comes to using content. So, you know, trying to be transparent about who's using what content when and how they're saying it, and being constantly sharing ideas so that when someone on one team is using it, they can learn from the good work that another team might be doing. And then that makes the brand seem very strategic and targeted and you know, coordinated so that when people are making a decision, it you know, presents the company in the best possible light. So I would say that's really key, is trying to get everybody on board and you know, in collaboration.
All right. So it's like internal feedback, once you create the content, even find out what people think about it and how they might be adjusted, might be used, that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. And understanding where it's being used. So, cause you know, certainly one example being the PR team knowing where the advertising placements are, you know, cause that can only intensify a particular campaign, knowing that you're being published, say you're in the New York Times doing advertising and trying to get in, with editorial as well, is helpful in knowing what the advertising message was, so that when you're talking about editorial opportunities, you can kind of present it in a slightly different stance, but have it be coordinated and complementary, you know, is really important.
Wow. I think, Kelly, I have a whole page of notes written down from our conversation here now. I don't even know how we're going to make the creative to promote this podcast, because there's too many things to put on the page. I've just got lists and lists and lists of orders of things and different things to do and advice. So this has been awesome. Before we finish up, is there anything in particular you'd like to share, that anything we haven't gotten to yet?
I would say one other good word of advice is certainly is testing your content and testing messages. So just because a particular white paper doesn't perform in one campaign doesn't mean that that paper is going to be useless. It means that maybe the way you tried to present it didn't resonate with a particular audience, and testing out, you know, a different subject or a different headline or a different audience. You know, maybe it didn't resonate with one audience, but it would with another. So testing and comparing and measuring are all important aspects of content marketing, so that you can learn and, you know, tweak and particularly optimize in the future.
So if you create something and it's not a home run right off the bat, don't get bummed.
Don't panic.
Yeah, make some adjustments and try it out again.
Yeah, that's the beauty of digital, is that you can quickly make updates to something that's hosted somewhere and, you know, or, you know, alter your digital ads pretty easily. So just because it didn't go perfectly initially doesn't mean that you can't optimize for future growth.
Yeah. So I just say don't go straight to a Super Bowl commercial. Make sure you got it right before that. But short of that, yeah, keep experimenting and putting it out there and finding out what works. And I guess that can vary over time all the time. So
yeah. Kelly, it was awesome to have you on. This was really informative. I hope our listeners really take it to heart. I wrote some notes down myself. I'm going to go get with our content generators. There's another funnel. We need to make another funnel a little more robust.
I feel like I want to take a picture of my information sheets from these podcasts and share it with the podcast to see all the scribbles, everything from arrows to doodles to lists and everything that we put on here. So Kelly, it's been fantastic. Everybody listening, if you want to find Kelly, you can find her on LinkedIn. Just look her up by name, Kelly Noblett. It's KelleyNoblett. Of course, we'll have your information on the show notes here as well. On behalf of the IFE Market team and Carla Joe and Kelly Noblett of Skillsoft, thank you for listening. And
if you content market the shit out of it, they will come.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.